Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guests today are Kathleen Gore and Alexandra Curtis. Kathleen is on the board of directors of the Skinny Atlas branch of the American Association of University Women. Allie is a senior at Syracuse University and a participant in an event sponsored by the association called Elect Her, an effort to recruit and support more young women to pursue leadership positions in colleges and universities, as well as running for future political office. One disclosure, Allie was also an intern for the Campbell Conversations last year. Kathleen and Allie, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Kathleen, first, briefly tell me what the American Association of University Women is.
AAUW is an organization of women countrywide. It has 170,000 members. It has about 1,000 branches. It seeks to advance educational opportunities and economic equality and equity for women and girls.
And is it primarily focused in the university setting, or is it more broadly
Much more broadly.
Okay, and we'll talk about Elect Her in a couple minutes specifically, but first I want to talk about the political problem that it's trying to deal with. So, Kathleen, where are we as a nation in terms of women holding elected office?
I was in Turkey in 1999, and I asked the guide how many women were in their legislature, and he said, oh, I'm afraid to say about 25%. Now, that's anecdotal. I didn't check it up, but we certainly were worse then, and we haven't made as great a strides as we would like to see. In New York, for instance, ranks 33rd in the nation for the percentage of women in the state legislature. It has only 21%. The national average is 24%.
Allie, that's the number for the state. What's going on at the national level?
Oh, we're looking at the U.S. Senate. We have 20% of women serving in those positions.
And the House representatives?
I believe we're at about 18%, but we've been riding between 18 and 20% there for the past, you know, decade.
So it sounds like we're just sort of stuck at about a fifth here in terms of the proportion. So, Kathleen, this is probably an impossibly tangled question, but why is this the case?
It's probably much like the question, why do women make 77 cents for every dollar than a man makes? It's a very complicated question. Women need to run for office more. They don't. Women need to be encouraged to run for office more, and they need to be given the support to run for office more. We believe that the will for women to run for office, local, state, and national, is there. In fact, in local terms, women hold the highest percentage of offices.
So I want to switch this now to colleges and universities, because that's, I think, the focus of your organization, and certainly Elect Her. Is part of this how women are viewed, meaning the assumptions that are made about young women in higher education, how they are encouraged or not encouraged to think about pursuing positions of political leadership?
I think perception does play a big part in it. And also another part is how women view themselves, how they view their career track, how they view their capabilities of getting a degree, studying, and running for office, and how they look at the long term. Young women today don't have that mentality, but they also don't have the mentors that men do. They don't have the examples. And I think we need to ask more young women why they don't run for public office and see what they say. We can philosophize and guess, but we ought to ask them.
And so, Allie, what's been your experience of this? You've lived this the last 4 years.
Right. So, of course, I got involved in student government as soon as I came to Syracuse. And I realized straight off the bat that there weren't very many women involved at all. And when looking at the executive board that was in place when I came in, there were no women serving. So, of course, one of the trends that has been cited across college campuses is that you have this sort of good old boys club that still exists in student governments across the United States. So, aside from that, of course, you see a lot of more women involved in undergraduate education. There's higher enrollment numbers of women, but you still see about 60% men serving in the executive position of being student body president and 40% women. So when I got involved with this, I wanted to find out a lot more, and that's when I found out about Lecter and the fact that there are a lot of women who are involved in leadership positions in college campuses, but they seek positions in Greek organizations, service organizations, dance troops, things that are more pertinent to women or organizations that are more focused towards women as opposed to student government.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with the American Association of University Women's Kathleen Gore and Syracuse University student Allie Curtis. Kathleen, let me ask you, going back to the big picture, are there any – you mentioned Turkey earlier. Are there any countries in the Western world that stand out as more equal in terms of gender and office holding, sort of the ones that are establishing the frontier of progress here?
Iceland.
Tell me about that one.
I know that I don't know if they still have a woman president, but they used to. Germany has a woman president. And in the Scandinavian countries, it seems that women are making more progress in that area and have a different outlook also.
So what's their secret then? Is it a different culture? Or are there certain policies in place that make this a reality?
There is a tremendous support for women in those countries. If a woman has a baby, she will be supported until she can go back to work. There is an idea that a woman, that the family is a good thing, but if you don't have a husband, you know, we will help you and you can go back to work. You will not be penalized for the time off, and you will be valued. It's almost as if their family values are better than ours in some way. At least some people would look at it that way.
We had Madeline Cunin, the former governor of Vermont, on the program a few months ago, and she was focusing in on those kind of policies, too, as being instrumental in creating a lot of different kinds of equality. Let me push you a little bit on this, though, and bring up a different example. There are some countries, Britain is one, where the parties take quite an active role in this, and sometimes they will do in a particular district for parliament a requirement that the entire list of eligible candidates be female, all female lists they have. In a sense, it's a quota system that they run sort of for particular districts. And that's been quite successful there in getting those overall numbers higher than they would have been otherwise. Is that something that you think parties might want to experiment with here, or is that going to go too much against the American culture?
I think that would be very much resisted. I would say, though, that you could put it to people this way. We need women mentors. When I was a little girl, my grandmother was very active in the League of Women Voters. But no one in the family thought of a woman running for public office. So we need women mentors. And to that extent, if the parties can address those issues, get some women elected, it will help everyone.
Now, Allie, you were instrumental, I understand, in, as a student, bringing the association's Elect Her initiative to campus and having the event here. So tell me a little bit about Elect Her, what it's trying to do, and how it goes about doing that.
Well, Elect Her really does two things, and that's encouraging younger women on campus to get involved and run for student government positions so we can close that gender gap with women serving in executive roles and just in student government in general across the country. And then the other side of that is actually building a pipeline of women who want to get out and run for public office once they've graduated. So we had a lot of seniors who are ready to get out there and run. I certainly was more in that sense, having already served as student body president. But the other side of that was encouraging our freshman and sophomore classes to start thinking about running for student government and realizing their own political leadership isn't something that they need to do more with by getting another degree or actually getting involved firsthand. We really wanted to show them they can jump on in and take our student government to the next level.
And so is the actual event more about inspirational kinds of conversations, or was it nuts and bolts?
Well, we had both, which was great. We had Mayor Stephanie Miner come, and she was definitely more of the inspiration. And then we had Tasha Cole, who is a trainer from Running Start, the organization that works with AAUW to bring elect her to all of these college campuses. So we did the nuts and bolts bit. We had several women speak about their own experiences on student government. I was able to speak about campaigning and my time in office as president, and we had our Board of Elections chairwoman, a judicial chairwoman, come in and talk about how women can get out there and actually run for office.
Did you have one particular aha moment that you took out of that day?
I think the big aha moment came with Mayor Stephanie Miner and being able to hear her own stories and what it's like from her perspective as the first female mayor of Syracuse and some of the things that she's had to deal with and how she's been a trailblazer in her own respect. So that was great to see her and take a little bit of inspiration from that.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guests are Kathleen Gore and Allie Curtis, and we've been talking about the gender gap in political office holding. Kathleen, do you have any sense of the program's overall effectiveness?
Yes, we have some statistics. 88% of the 2013 participants who ran for student government, president won.
Hmm.
20% more students plan to run for student government and political office, and 100% of the participants reported that they would recommend the program elect her to a friend.
Are there, for either of you, any individual success stories from this program that stand out and stay with you?
Well, we just recently had this training, and we don't have another election cycle at Syracuse until the spring of 2015, just because we had some elections codes change. But I know that there were several women who were interested in running for the vice presidency. One in particular had plans to run with a male running mate who was running for president. And after the training, she said, forget about it. I'm running for president myself. And she wants to run with a female running mate as well, too. And we've never really seen that here on campus. Out of nearly 60 years of our student government at Syracuse University, we've only had one woman as president with a female VP, and we haven't even seen the two run together on a ticket before. So that's very exciting to see that there are women who are inspired and ready to get out there and run, and I'm quite positive we're going to have a very female-oriented election cycle. I know in my 4 years here, I'm the only woman who's run for office in that capacity. So it's exciting to see others jumping into the mix.
I wanted to ask you a question about your presidency, because there's quite a large literature on female political office holders in terms of their different style of organizing meetings. If there are committee chairs, for example, there's a whole literature on the different kinds of issues that women tend to push. It's not an absolute difference, but there are some pretty clear overall differences. Did you sense any of that with your own presidency? Did you focus on different things as student president than your male predecessors had?
Absolutely. Well, of course, I was very adamant about providing these opportunities for women. So we did pass a resolution saying that our student government would be supporting any kind of opportunity for women on campus, whether it's offering resources to them or leadership training. And aside from that, an interesting story that sticks out in my mind is we had a leadership retreat where we focused on the leadership wheel and the four different types of leaders. And you have the visionaries, the warriors, those who are more nurturers, and then those who really need hard facts to back up everything that they do. And it was interesting to see how myself and the rest of the women who are in our student government really identified with the nurturing side, and then the men, including my successor. We now have a new president in place, and he's one of those hard facts kinds of people. And it's interesting because we are all attracted to the warrior side in one respect, but then we also all shared the women, of course, and our female VP and I both shared those nurturing qualities that the men didn't actually gravitate towards to when we did the training. So it's interesting to see how that definitely plays into what we do. And there were more mentorship programs available when I was president, and there was a lot more community building than just getting down to the details and taking care of business.
And do you have a particular political role model or models for your that you want to pattern yourself in the future
yes.
after?
Yes. I am a huge fan of Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. I actually registered to vote in the state of New York just so I could vote for her. But I think she's really been a champion of women's issues, and it has made that the forefront of her agenda, and that's something that I think a lot of women can aspire to be and support.
And Kathleen, on picking up on that note and bringing it back more locally, by comparison with the rest of the state and the country, the Syracuse area seems very well represented by women in leadership roles. The mayor, the county executive, SUNY Oswego, Onondaga Community College, the superintendent of the Syracuse schools, up until recently Syracuse University, and the county health commissioner, among other positions.
Don't forget LeMoyne.
Right. There you go. And some of the hospitals. So there's quite a bit of female leadership here in this area. So to what would you attribute that? Chance? What's going on here?
I would say the opportunities. Look at the universities and community colleges we have here. And we have other institutions that I think are friendly to women executives. I think there's a real opportunity here for women, and I also think that there's a great need. There's a great need in Central New York. It is not a place where people think they're going to make their name. People look at it and talk about how big Syracuse used to be, what used to be there, and it's just the kind of challenge that I think a woman would not be afraid of taking on.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guests are Kathleen Gore and Allie Curtis, and we've been talking about the gender gap in political office holding. Kathleen, I wanted to turn this now to academia itself. Does the American Association of University Women also look at and be concerned over the representation of women in leadership positions in the academy?
Yes, they do. Yes, and in fact, they're at our state convention. I gave a talk and showed a graph from the New York Times, which showed that women at all levels in educational administration were paid less than men. So, in other words, you aren't surprised to see a grade school principal who's a woman. You should be surprised to see statistics that say that they are paid significantly less than male grade school principals. Now, this was nationwide, of course, so I'm not picking on Central New York.
Are there any trends there in terms of the number of positions held by women in leadership roles in education, whether it's higher education or grade school education?
Anecdotally, I see trends. I can't tell you the statistics, but anecdotally, I see wonderful trends. Look at Harvard, and as you just mentioned, Central New York.
And Allie, I want to come back now to political office holding and push you a little bit on why you want to do this. I know that a lot of people in your generation see the personal nastiness and the general dysfunction in our political system, and they conclude, you can't really blame them perhaps, that they want little part in it. What are you seeing here that makes you want to join in?
Well, I grew up outside of Washington, D.C., and then San Francisco, so I've lived in two very civically engaged areas in our country, and I think I really picked up on something from both of those places about getting involved and being a leader with integrity, somebody who can really make a stance and hopefully inspire people to do something good, and that's something that I've seen with my time in student government here at Syracuse University. So despite the, I guess, negative stereotypes that come along with being in office and the general dysfunction that people tend to associate with political leadership, I certainly hope that the way that I operate as a leader can actually contribute to that, contribute to turning that around, really. And it's just something that I've really enjoyed doing and enjoyed studying as well. And I think actually getting out there and putting the theories that I've learned in class into action and taking that to the next level would be thrilling and very rewarding.
Well, I may be engaging in a bit of stereotyping of my own here, but I would think that the level of personal nastiness that we are seeing in politics today would be a particular turnoff to women. Can you speak a little bit about that? And do you perceive that as a challenge among your female student colleagues?
Well, absolutely. And I think one of the things that turned off a lot of women to even running for the presidency here on campus this past cycle was seeing the things that I had gone through. And I experienced when I was vice president, I served as vice president as a sophomore. So I was young and a woman, and I had a lot of criticism. And because of that, I had really thought about not running for president. And then I said, you know what, this is what I want to do. This is what I've always wanted to do. And I'd be very disappointed in myself if I didn't at least try. And I tried and I succeeded. And my presidency brought a whole new storm of nastiness on campus. I mean, I even had several of my peers tried to impeach me. And it was very much a personal attack over anything really serious. And the things that I would see about myself on social media or in our newspaper, or the way I would be covered over the other male candidates, or the way the Daily Orange, our campus paper, would talk about my lipstick and my high heels instead of my qualifications, definitely were enough to turn me off. So again, I faced a time where I said, you know, once I'm done with serving as president, I'm done altogether. I don't think I'm going to run for office. But I've been a part of the Miss America organization, and my platform has been getting women involved in political leadership. And a former Miss Vermont saw that I had chosen that as my platform, and she came to talk to me about running for office because she had done the same thing. And I said, well, no, I had a really bad time as student body president. And she said, well, you've already taken a beating, you know what it's like, and who better to you than you to actually get out there and run? You've already weathered the storm. If not you, it's going to be another woman who hasn't been through all of that. And that was the particular moment where I said, okay, yeah, I'm absolutely running for office, and I want to do this as soon as I possibly can.
So circling back to elect her, the mentorship in that instance was very important to you.
Absolutely, and having female role models who believe in you and have been through it and can say it's okay, because, you know, politics is something that you can get knocked down in, you can get bruised a lot in, and you just need someone there who's cheering you on in your corner. And then I think that's what really gets people to stay in the game.
So, Kathleen, I wanted to ask you now, obviously the two of you are from different generations, and that's been clear in our conversation. So do you have one particular nugget of advice you'd want to give to Allie as she's stepping out into this nasty terrain of running for political office?
Well, it's hard to sort my nuggets, but I would say to her, first of all, you will get tougher. Men get tougher and women get tougher, and you will get tougher. And it's a good thing to have a sense of humor, but you don't have to use it all the time. Sometimes you can just say, cut it out. And in terms of other advice, I would say, ask the people whom you are asking to elect you what they care about, what their concerns are, and listen to them.
That was Allie Curtis and Kathleen Gore. Allie and Kathleen, thanks much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Research assistance was provided by Brooke Weinstein. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. Visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations for more information.